here we come, sports fans. Another installment of the Bart and Bolme Show. It's a Thursday. Miami Heat, Dallas Mavericks, doing it tonight. Game 5. It's really all about the NBA Finals. Except for when you got a baller in the booth. Then you change things up a little bit. All of a sudden, it's not all about NBA. All of a sudden, it's all about SC football. I brought a baller in, and he's a fan favorite. A lot of you guys love him. A lot of you guys cheering for this guy to rip it up this year. I believe he will. Mr. 34, defensive back, USC Trojans, Tony Burnett!
Out in the street, they call it murder.
Woo! Out in the streets, what these guys do is called murder. And on the field, it's just football, baby. And we got a winner. And he's not just a football player. He knows a little wrestling, knows a little something about track. Tony, man, talk to these people. Talk to your fans, man.
Hey, how you guys doing? Hope you guys are having a good day. What is it? 86 days till Trojan football starts. Hope everybody's prepared. Show up at the Coliseum loud and proud, and we'll put on a show for you guys.
Boom. Not that anybody's counting. But, yeah, on this show, man, we fiend for football, NFL, and SC football. Let's just talk about this. I got to ask you one question about the NFL, because I know you're a fan. What the hell are these guys doing, and are they going to get a deal done and get us some football?
You know, NFL, what is this? It's about a $9 billion a year industry.
Give or take.
Yeah, I don't think those people are crazy enough to let all that money pass by, you know. And then, you know, you create public outlash because, you know, you have, you know, not even outside of the owners and the players, you have the little man, the people that work the stands at the games, you know, the people that do the concessions and stuff, and, you know, you leave them out of work. And
big time.
I think there's just too much complication that I go into. I just think, you know, that one way or the other, somebody's going to have to swallow the pride. You know, they'll come down and eventually have a deal.
Yeah, somebody's going to get it done over there. I hope the players don't bend over too bad. They deserve that money. They deserve guaranteed contracts. They deserve health care. And I'm not talking about just Tom Brady. I'm not talking about Peyton Manning. I'm talking about that dude who kills himself on special teams almost literally, who gets hurt, who might not be able to provide for his family, guarantee contracts and health care. I hope you guys get it. Let's not even go there. Let's go back to college football. Right. You're a local boy, Mayfair High School, SoCal born and raised.
Yep.
Do you feel that growing up in SoCal has gotten you more prepared or more used to the spotlight that you're under now?
Yeah. When you grow up out here, there's a lot of emphasis on sports, you know, specifically football in Southern California, you know. Everything's, you know, Southern section this, Northern section that, Central section this. So, you know, everybody focuses on football. You know, everybody wants to call themselves the so-and-so best. You know, it got to a point where they reestablished the state championship game. So, you know, football is a big focal point. And even being around SC, I've been to a couple of SC games before as a youngster. So being in the Coliseum, actually getting to see the stuff before you step on the field, it prepares you to go out there and be ready.
Are there still some little battles with you and your teammates in terms of repping the high schools? Because I know you guys battle interstate. Guys like Tupo up north think the up north scene is where it's at. All of us think the down south scene is where it's at. You guys still poke and prod at each other a little bit?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, we got guys. That's one thing about our team. Our team is diverse. We got guys from everywhere, you know. So we battle from, you know, Northern California to Southern California, and it even goes down to you know, to Southern section, to City section, you know, San Diego, you know, Oakland, Fresno, you know, it goes deeper than that. And then when you go out of state, it's like you got Florida, Georgia, California. It's like, I'll chime in and say California creates the best athletes, but, you know, there's constant battles about which state has the best athletes.
From what I've seen, we got the cream of the crop. There's some bad boys in Texas. There's some bad boys in Florida. But when there's guys like you walking around at JUCOs, case closed. Case closed. That's the bottom line. Let's talk about your JUCO experience, man. Tell the people, honestly, truly, how does a guy like you end up at a JUCO?
Coming out of high school, you know, there's a lot that goes into, you know, who you are as an athlete and how you establish yourself. I went so as far as to coming up to SC camp, you know, and actually got my name written up in an article, and surprisingly still didn't get recruited, you know, because my name didn't come out. I didn't have any stars. I wasn't, you know, this five-star athlete, this all these accolades. I didn't have all these stats, you know, because at my school we didn't have a lot of athletes. So, you know, I had to do a little bit of everything. You know, I wasn't able to get the ball every play. Sometimes I had to go out there, you know, and be the guy that's blocking. You know, some games I had to line up and play linebacker, so I couldn't go out there and get interceptions, you know. So it's little things like that. But yeah, I had a few looks out of high school. I didn't really, you know, want one specifically. Like, there wasn't one that just stuck to me. I was like, okay, I'm going there. So I was like, one more go around, you know, went to my JUCO, and luckily by me making that decision, I ended up here, which is the best situation for me.
Man, it's the best for us too. Between the sanctions, between guys going pro, I mean, especially on the defensive side of the ball, we need all the help we can get. That's the bottom line. I feel like a talent like you in a state like this could slip between the cracks a little bit. I mean, that's the downside of being in Cali. Talk about the two regimes, because you got a little taste of the Pete Carroll regime, right? They were after you a little bit,
yeah.
At least preliminary talks of getting you into some pads, and then poof, they were gone.
Right.
In comes Lane Kiffin. Talk about what that was like from your perspective.
It was kind of a downer for me because, you know, Coach Carroll, you know, Coach Nord, you know, they were like, okay, you know, we'll get you ready, you know, saying, let's go do some, take care of this paperwork, you know, summertime, you know, we'll lace you up and stuff and get you ready to come in and play. And, you know, I was waiting, like, yes, summer's almost here, you know, it's time to go. And then this, I know it's like, Pete Carroll's gone. Then it's like, Ken Norton's gone. Rocky Seto's gone. And it's like, one by one, they all started disappearing, you know, and I was like, okay, who do I turn to now? There's nobody here, you know. So I was just like, you know, I'll do my track thing. I'll let that football thing handle itself. And one day, you know, just walking through Heritage, got stopped by Coach O. You know, I guess he noticed a little size on me, asked me to play football, you know. So I guess looking at that from a bigger perspective, it was probably destined for me to end up playing football, you know. So I'm thankful for the opportunity the coaches created for me and made available to me, and now I'm here taking advantage of it.
Man, it felt sudden from a fan's perspective. Man, the regime was just gone. Fans feel like it affects them. It obviously doesn't. It affects guys like you.
Right.
And, I mean, it proves how sudden it was. You would think Pete Carroll would have been like, here's a piece of paper, here's Tony Burnett's name and number, and right. A couple other ballers that you want to get into pads. Doesn't really work like that.
No.
When a guy like Pete Carroll bounces, he's gone, never to return, really.
Right.
And they just throw the program to Lane Kiffin. How do you think Coach Kiffin has done, basically being thrown into this fire the way he was?
I think Coach Kiffin has done great. You know, he's really optimistic, one of the most optimistic people I've met, you know, because there's even, you know, there's some times where he's talking, and I'm just like, how do you even, like, stay that positive about the things that are going on right here, you know? But that's a good thing, because that's you need our coach, because he's your ultimate leader as a head coach. And, you know, at first you're like, Coach, like, they're killing us. But, you know, when he keeps reiterating the fact, you know, and he gets your mind right, you know, it just trickles down from the head coach to the assistant coaches, you know, to the assistant coaches, to the players, you know, to the fans. So him being that vocal leader and that strong point for our team is really helping out.
Did any players take you under their wing? Or were they like, let's see what this kid's got before we totally bring him into the family?
When they found out I was coming out there, Sharice Wright, you know, every time you see me, hey, you know, when you coming out there, man,
nice.
We go get you ready. When I came out there in the summer, you know, all the DBs, you know, hey, stay after, we gonna get some work in, you know, you want to come watch some film with us, you know, we'll go over some stuff with you. Coach, you know, Sammy Knight, he stayed with me and watched extra film with me, day after day, times where he should have been home a long time ago. You know, we both in there dozing off, but we like, you know, we got a job to get done. We in there just watching film, you know, trying to get me better, get me prepared.
Wow. I've always wondered about those guys. I've wondered, is Sammy Knight, Kerry Colbert, a guy like that, is he on staff to sort of show players, hey, that we got pros here to learn from, and then they don't really teach? That's awesome to hear that those guys spend the extra time. I know KC a little bit. I talked to him.
Right.
Don't know Sammy Knight that well. Talk about the other coaches. Let's talk about the other coaches, position coaches. Monty, what have those guys done for you, and what has been the effect on you?
My position coach, Garza, he'll call me, you know. I probably, honestly, didn't take full advantage of being out there. I mean, I did, but, you know, Coach Garza stayed on me, you know. Hey, Tony, he would call me. Tony, he texted me. Tony, come up, you know, come get some film study in. You got class, you got an hour between classes. Come up, get some film in, you know. And Coach Monty, you know, he would call me in. I know you're not playing, but, you know, just don't think that you're not valuable to our team, you know, because he always reminds us that, you know, you could be a two, but when the one goes down, guess what? Now you're a one. You know, you could be a three, but when the two goes down, guess what? Now you're a one. So, you know, he would always tell me, you know, just make sure you know your playbook, you know, stay in, because there's going to come a point in time when we need you. And they probably didn't think it would be the Notre Dame game, but it ended up being that game. So then they just, you know, stayed on my case, you know, because being – when you're not playing a lot, it's hard to just go out there and say, okay, I'm going to keep working. It's like, I'm not going to play. But they stay on you to make sure you're focused and that you're trying to having you at the best of your ability.
Guys like me, fans, basically, We all assume there's a huge difference between JUCO and pro. We just talked about the coaching staff. There's not a whole lot of Monty Kiffin's coaching at JUCO's. Is the difference as huge as we, the fans, feel it is?
It's a huge difference. I'm at USC, you know, where there is no slack with our coaches. We have the best coaches all around, you know, in the nation. So coming from a JUCO, which isn't really that big, you know, I didn't come from, you know, the Elko, you know, the bigger JUCOs out there. I came from a small one that's called, you know, LA Southwest. So coming from there to here, you know, not to say the coaches were bad or anything, but you know, they don't have the experience of the Monty Kiffins of winning Super Bowls, of being at colleges, of winning national championship, of playing on national championship teams, and you know, and playing and being all Americans. So, you know, when you go from a JUCO rank to here, it's like you start hearing terms differently, stuff getting explained more, you know, in depth, and just the fact that a lot of coaches have played the game and been out there and seen so much of it at highest level, their way of breaking it down to you is much more, you know, complicated than it is at a JUCO level.
Yeah, I mean, from a fan's perspective, it's night and day. Talk about just you personally. What was your weight senior year, weight and height? Because you probably grew. Weight and height, JUCO. Weight and height now.
My senior year in high school, I was 5'11", 185. Then, you know, luckily I grew a few inches, came into JUCO. I was 6'1", still about 185. And then when I joined the SC program, got up to 190, and now I'm at 200 pounds out there. So, yeah, I've grew a bit.
You would think it would do something to your track times, but I'm hearing you're putting up personal bests. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I actually PR'd my first two meets this year. I PR'd. Then I had my ankle injury. It kind of went downhill, which kind of sucks. But, you know, when I started, I was out there just PRing, you know, laying down stuff that I probably never saw myself doing. But, you know, it helps a lot, but that's, you know, that's the thing about being in a Division I program. You know, it's the best of the best.
I got to ask you, is it different being a track star on this campus as opposed to being a football star on this campus?
Most definitely. You walk around with an SC track and
field. The girls. They don't know you when you're a track star, right?
Right. You walk around with an SC track and field shirt, it's like, okay, like, what do you do? You know, like, what's your name? You walk around with an SC football shirt. It's, hey, aren't you number 34? You know, because it's like everybody out there, they see you. You know, you're on the Jumbotron. Track meets people barely even know about. I commend Pat Hayden because this year he did promote track more. You know, our schedule is actually on the spring sports.
He really does.
Things.
He really does.
Yeah. So, you know, that really helped. But before then, it was just like, are you?
Who are you? What's your story? And should I know who you are?
Right. And then football is just like, we know who you are. Yeah, you're Tony Burnett. You're number 34, right? You play corner. You had the interception. You had that big hit. It's like, yeah, that's me. Like they'll tell you more about you than you know about yourself.
I know it's got to be the life being a football star. I've read in articles that it's a little intimidating making that crossover to the football field. In the back of anyone's mind, I would assume you're like, am I big enough? Am I fast enough? Am I strong enough? You got the look of a mega stud, but I mean, I've read articles where it said you had some of those thoughts running through your mind.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. When you walk around with the guys, it's like, okay, look at my size, look at him. You know, you're looking at him to the right and left of you, you're like, all right, I'm pretty good. But there's something about when you put on those pads and you step on that field and it's 7 o'clock at night, and you look around and you see 9,000 people watching your every move. So, you know, every mistake that you make, you know, it's seen not only within the stadium, it's seen on the, you know, Jumbotron and nationally across the world. So, you know, you go out there and, you know, you people say, oh, this wide receiver, he's 6'2", 220. You're like, oh, that's not that much bigger than me. And then when he lines up across from you, you're like, whoa, yeah, let me get prepared to play against this guy. So there's a big difference.
How do you get over that pad effect? Seeing a dude in pads, being instantly intimidated. Do you tell yourself that guy looks like a laid-back surfer guy when he's not in pads? I mean, what do you tell yourself?
You know, that's where the preparation comes in hand, you know, and you have to have your self-confidence. That's one thing you have, football player, you have to have is self-confidence and short-term memory. So, you know, you go out there and you're just like, you know, I prepared for you all week. nothing's changing about you. Yeah, you may step up to the plate because it's USC, it's a big game. But, you know, I've studied you. You know, I know how you run certain routes. I know certain formations with plays you are and aren't going to run. So you just have to go out there knowing that, and you have to go with the confidence and the swagger. Like, you know, you're not – you have to basically tell yourself, like, he's not better than me, and I'm going to prove it on this field that he's not better than me.
Yeah, when I see a guy like Red Ellison around campus,
yeah,
flip-flops, surfer look, on his skateboard – I'm like, hey, there goes Red Ellison, fellow student.
Right.
When I got a mic in front of his face out on the practice field after you guys are done practicing, I feel a little something in my bones. I'm like, there's a huge gentleman next to me, a guy that could crush me. That pad effect is huge. I've always wondered how you guys get over that. Do you just need to get popped in the mouth? I mean, is that more or less the way it goes? Once the game starts, does all that vanish?
Personally, for me, I have jitters till I get, like, in my first collision, not just the first hit. Like,
for sure.
You know, I need a, I see you, you see me, we're coming at each other, head-to-head collision, you know. And then once I get that out the way, I'm like, okay, like, let's go. But like you said, people like Rhett, man, it's like, you'll see him, you know, if you were just outside, walk around, you'd be like, oh, I could talk to him, like, easily. But oh, try throwing a big hit on Rhett, you'll feel it.
Man, I've had a class with Dupo, and we're just hanging out, rapping. I don't feel intimidated. I know I've seen this guy in pads. A lot of people haven't because, man, Big Dog's been hurt. I've seen this guy in pads. Scary.
Yeah.
Scary. Just straight scary. So that pad effect is huge. Last question. Mm-hmm. You know what it is. What can we expect from you? What can we expect from the Trojans in 2011?
You know, just expect us to go out there and work hard. I'm not going to call any record, but just know that we're going to be a hard-working team. You know, we have a lot taken from us, but we're going to work. I can just see out there on the field, even in the locker room, guys' minds have changed, especially, you know, from our freshman class. You know, like, last year they came in, you know, and there was a lot of great guys, you know, and they didn't, you know, some of them didn't get the opportunity, you know, some of them did and, you know, weren't ready. But, like, now I could just see a change with them. But I think it comes from a bigger standpoint, from the older guys. You know, we've changed the mindset in the locker room. So the Trojan fans should be prepared, you know, for exciting season. Guys are more focused, you know, guys are ready. The system, you know, that everybody's like, oh, does the system really work? You know, we're into it now. We're understanding it a lot more. So I feel like they should be able to prepare for a dominant team. And I know we can't play for it, but Pac-12 champions.
I think that's what the fans are expecting. This defense looks raw, man. I got to tell you, not just saying that because you're here. We got exposed early on last year. The Hawaii game, to me, was a debacle. Guys got it together. We shored up that backfield. We shored up that front line. Bottom line, I think the D's going to rip this year. I kind of lied to you a little bit. I got one more question, and I have to ask it.
No problem.
Terrell Pryor, Ohio State, is that something you guys talk about? And what do you feel in terms of the hypocrisy between what those guys are getting away with and what happened here in L.A.?
Well, there's a lot of repercussions they're going to face, and I'm not even prepared. If ours is so bad as it is, I can't even imagine what they're going to do to Ohio State. But I don't know. I just feel like – I've always feel like money has played a big factor into what goes on, and I feel like one of the main reasons they got to play in their game is probably, you know, from a money standpoint, you know, which I can't blame. You know, people got to work. People got to get paid. You got to do what you got to do. But I don't think it's fair, you know, to us when we have to sit back and we have to suffer the consequences for people that played before, you know, we even had thoughts of being Trojans. And you have people out there, you know, doing wrong in the present day, and they're getting to playing games, and they're just getting suspensions, and they're not suffering any scholarship losses yet, which I know is going to take time, but it just sucks because it's like, why is all this happening to us? But there's people out there doing it in the current day and time that are getting away with it, and we got our appeal denied. Like, you would think with what happened out there that, you know, that we would have a good chance, you know, so our appeal getting denied was a blow, like, wow, you know. But I feel like the NCAA would do the right thing with that case. I feel like they'll take care of it in the manner that's necessary. We won't get to see it or live it, but they take care of that. That's their governing body. That's what they do. All we can worry about is our play on the field, you know, and bringing it every down.
Exactly. My whole thing with it is it used to be part of the American dream that you don't pay someone else's debt. Your dad does something wrong, it doesn't carry over to the son. If the son screws up, they don't send the dad to jail. You know what I mean? We're individuals. We pay our own debts. Reggie Bush did what he did. I'm not exactly sure how the NCAA got to where they got in terms of lack of institutional control. I completely disagree with them. This is truly my last question for you, TB, because I feel like this would solve everything. The NCAA says that we can't pay the players because then we would have to pay the taxes on the players and blah, blah, F and blah. What about just letting you guys go get what you can get? If somebody in Europe wants to see TB run in a track meet professionally and pay him to go over there, he should be able to do that. In my mind, should the players be able to get what they can get, or should we maintain amateur status, quote unquote, within the NCAA and keep it the way it is?
I just feel like this should be, I don't know what to call it, I guess a going rate established just across the board for, you know, coaches to be able to provide for the athletes, because, you know, some of the athletes, you know, they do come from families where it's like, okay, you know, they're fine, they don't need that, you know, but there are some athletes that football is really all they have, and if they don't have football, you know, they're going to resort to going out and having to do, you know, things that they that might not be legal, you know.
I'm not proud of all the things I've done for money or done in my childhood and growing up. I mean, I'm a lot older than you guys. I've been around the block a lot more than you guys. I've done things I'm not proud of. I can only imagine what somebody who doesn't come from my background would do.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm not, obviously, a guy like me doesn't get the opportunities that a football player does on this campus. Mm-hmm. But if one of my bosses, if one of my professors says, hey, you want to go to Morton's for a steak? Guess where I'm at? I'm at Morton's having a free steak. That's just me, though. But, I mean, I can't believe what they do to you guys. I can't thank you enough for coming in.
No problem.
This is big time. I feel like you're going to be big time. You've never acted big time. I mean, you've blended in with the Trojan family. You take on all comers in terms of your fans. I see you on Twitter.
Right.
I see you reaching out. I see you after practice just granting, you know, anybody want to talk to TB, TB's right there. Just talk about what it is to be a Trojan, man. Let's close on that.
There's no other program I would rather be with. SC is just honestly where it's at. Like, and I've been other places and I've heard from other people, and like the things that they tell me when we have conversations about our schools, that's nothing like the SC family, you know. So it's just so much bigger than university and the school, just in general. There's so many people you touch just being a Trojan, even like from kids. There's so many Trojan fans out there. Like, it really surprised me, you know. So when you're a Trojan and you can go out there and set an example for a kid, you know, you come from low income, you can go out there and make it happen as a Trojan. You give those kids dreams. They might not be able to be Trojans, you know, when they grow up, but just giving them the opportunity to believe in something is great.
If you guys are looking for a Trojan to cheer on in 2011, you could do a whole lot worse than number 34. Damn thing. Actually got a baller in the booth. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of this show, and I'm proud of our NBA coverage. It's SC football all the way through the season. You know we don't stop, and I'm definitely hollering at y'all next week.